Hello there, everybody, and welcome back to Reaccess Hollywoo, which is a podcast which is a rewatch podcast of BoJack Horseman. I'm a Rob Wilson type.
I'm a Samuel Cook type.
And the both of us have seen BoJack through, I've seen it through maybe three times. What about you?
Yeah, five. I think this is six.
So, spoiler territory if you're going any further than this. Either be caught up or be prepared for spoilers. It's up to you. Today, we are covering Season 2, Episode 7, Hank After Dark, and Season 2, Episode 8, Let's Find Out. Now, I said when we first started this that BoJack was a show that had very obvious points where it climbed upwards in quality. And I said that I was slightly wrong in the first season. I remember our A story is a D story being the episode where things really, really kicked off, where it went from being a decent show to a good show. It was one episode out. It's actually Say Anything, where BoJack goes from being a decent show to a good show. And I'm happy to report, though, that I was bang on about this, which is Hank After Dark, which is where BoJack Horseman goes up another level from being a good show to being a great show.
Yeah.
Because, wow, Hank After Dark and Let's Find Out are two great episodes. They're like little companion pieces. They're kind of built around the immediate kind of... It's you know, Mr. Peanut Butter's show is just about to take off. And then Let's Find Out is the first episode. So it's kind of like the night before and then the big event. And, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about Hank After Dark first. Just a reminder for those who maybe, you know, you're doing a rewatch of your own and you're just catching up, or, you know, you could be listening to this 2 years after we record it and BoJack's seventh season is in production or something like that. Diane goes off script during BoJack's book tour, jeopardizing Mr. Peanut Butter's new show. Todd gets involved in international affairs. Sam, what did you make of Hank After Dark? I absolutely love this.
I'm exactly the same. I think it's the best episode of the entire show so far.
It pushes down our ending very close.
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is... I always thought that... I always thought the downer ending... and I always used to have a lot of the episode 11s and episode 12s quite high up, but this for me is the best episode of the show so far. Everything works. It's the pre-credits on this episode. Everything is like bang on. I even enjoy I enjoyed Todd considerably for the first time since the rock opera because they cut things out that they'd normally put in, so he's not cut to having a wacky adventure as much. Obviously, in recent times in Hollywood, it's all kind of been like coming out as things like what Hank Hippopolis is
like.
Well,
I think that's what it's a reflection of, isn't it? It's either like, it seems like a cross between... sort of like Bill Cosby. I think he's supposed to be Bill Cosby because, like, I imagine they were writing this episode in like late 2014, maybe. And I don't think Harvey Weinstein and all the Me Too stuff had happened by that point. I think that was a little bit later. So I'd go with this being like Bill Cosby because Hank Hippopopoulos kind of has this America's granddad kind of feel about him when they introduce him on the show. And he has his own talk show. I mean, they introduce him in the flashback as the host of a talk show. If I'm kind of, you know, in the little clip that you have where BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter and Hank are up for whatever award it is that they're up for. Isn't Best Male Animal in a TV show or something like that?
Yeah.
In a comedy?
Yeah.
The flashbacks are always really good in the show, I think. This one's really funny, even if it doesn't have, like, a huge emotional heft behind it. You know how, like, the flashbacks we've had previously have all been about Charlotte, they've all been about Herb Kazaz, into BoJack's past specifically, about how BoJack has changed and how events from his past have kind of led him to this destructive point where he is a mess of a human in his 50s. This one has more emphasis on the humour, and all it really does is introduce Hank Hippopopoulos as a character. But to be honest, I just love being around BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter in the 80s and 90s. It's just something I really like. I don't know what it is. I think that it hints at something that I like in all my favourite TV shows, I think, maybe apart from The Simpsons, where there's like this rich... it's not just an implied history, it's like a deep history that there's like palpable connections between the history and the present, and there's loads of emotional and character weight behind it, and the cold open, like the pre-credits scene of this really hammers that home. I think that you get a couple of origins too for Mr. Peanut Butter's choices of humour.
Yeah, because you get the first. There.
Yeah, you get Erica, and you also get a crossover episode.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that Mr. Peanut Butter just kind of borrows most of it. Because I've just realised in that pre-credit scene, Mr. Peanut Butter is nominated for being in a show that is a direct copy of Horsin' Around. He takes a joke that's a direct copy of something that Hank Hippopopoulos says, and then he takes something that's a joke, or like a little gag or a cutaway thing that his wife at the time says with the Erica, etc., etc. So, yeah. Mr. Peanut Butter's an efficient recycler, we'll put it nicely.
Nice. I mean, did you feel at all bad for BoJack at the start? I felt quite like bad. He just wanted to be left alone. I don't know if...
Oh, I've been in that situation. Well, it kind of took me back to the first episode, like the very, very first episode, where Mr. Peanut Butter's kind of just a little bit irritating.
Bit too much, bit too full on. The arrogance of BoJack, I mean, is this... I mean, when does he do the BoJack Horseman show?
2007.
Yeah, so I presume Horsing Around is happening still. But I don't know why he feels that he's above everything. I mean, it is a direct rip-off, but...
I think it's like... towards the end of Horsing Around.
Yeah.
Because at the start... Because I think, isn't it... Has it been established, or is it established in later seasons that Herb Kazaz doesn't work on the later seasons?
Yeah, because they got rid... Yeah, they get rid of him, yeah. Yeah, he gets frozen out. But... Yeah, I just think he's a touch annoying on this... on this pre-credits segment. I did feel for BoJack, but I think if it was more around the place of the BoJack Horseman show, that it'd almost suit him to be above comedy performance in his mind, but I couldn't remember when that was. But yeah, efficient Reese, yes, he is Miss Peterborough.
I think, you know, I mean, when we get back to the present day, though, Mr. Peanut Butter's back on form with the Hank Hippopopoulos hip-hop hypothesis. God, the voice actors must hate the script writers. Obviously, Princess Caroline has a few challenges on that front in season 4. But there are so many Hank Hippopopoulos tongue twisters in this episode that I can't name them all. Some of them are a little bit more subtle than others, like with the... the news presenter kind of doing a little play on it too.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, yeah, go on.
I just like gave up like trying to catch them in enough time because they were so quick and they
you
so,
noticed
like,
the rhyme schemes,
winding.
But
yeah, I just couldn't know them.
Before we kind of get into the main kind of thrust of the episode, should we just talk about the Todd stuff and just kind of get it out of the way?
Yeah, I couldn't remember like when this actually appeared in the show, and then I saw him appear, and I'm like, oh, it's the Todd and Cordovia gag episode. I mean, it's there. I presume if both of them. Our vocal performances by Aaron
Paul.
Yeah,
I wasn't too sure about that, you know, whether, I was trying to make out whether it was Aaron Paul, but apparently it is Prince Gustav, yeah. Apparently it is Aaron Paul.
I mean, that's, I suppose that's a talent of...
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, it's a positive of this, B plot, because I think, well, C plot even, because yeah. I mean, it's there, And it's just another wacky Todd scheme where, obviously, an episode like this and the next one, there isn't really any time for that.
I think that I prefer Todd as the prince as opposed to the prince as Todd. I prefer the stuff that Todd himself gets up to as opposed to the stuff that the prince gets up to pretending to be Todd.
I mean, I prefer that because we don't actually have to visualise it and it's almost in the background.
Yeah, it's just this funny thing that's happening in the corner of the news and who gives a crap about that country kind of little joke.
Which, for Diane to say that nobody cares when she's arguing with Bojack, isn't she supposed to be someone who cares about these kind of things?
Mm. I have a feeling that she goes on this crusade in this episode, not only to try and do the right thing, but to kind of cover up the fact that, you know, she's given herself something to pursue in Hollywood so that she doesn't have to go to Cordovia. Like, she, yes. So she can focus on a project in Hollywood and pursue that so that she doesn't feel the pull from Cordovia anymore. And then once it kind of blows up in her face in this episode, and Mr. Peanut Butter kind of says, maybe you should just go. I think then she goes, oh, well, okay then. I'll go there then. And I feel like she was looking for... I feel like she was looking for a bit of an excuse to not have to go yet. And when everybody in this episode lets her down and leaves her isolated, she's left pretty much like... obviously, the circumstances are slightly different, but Bojack ends up going for... well, he ends up leaving LA at the end of this season for similar kind of reasons, where he kind of hopes to turn around and find reassurance, but he finds nobody, so he leaves. And I feel like Diane kind of does a very similar thing. But I feel like this episode with the Diane stuff is the moment when... That moment when the episode kind of turns on a dime, where she turns the book tour into that list where she lists off all those celebrities and then drops Hank Hippopopoulos' name in the middle. I also think it's the moment where the show turns on a dime as well, and it's when it really manages to combine a properly like serious and hard-hitting and heartbreaking story with really... cutting observations and really sharp humour about what would happen in this kind of situation. All the Manatee Fair tit-puncher stuff, the way that the newscasters deal with it, all of that, the way that the public deal with it, it's all kind of a little bit exaggerated, but at the same time, I always feel like the best... I mean, there are moments across these two episodes that really remind me of The Simpsons, in the way that they deal with pop culture, in the sense that they can exaggerate it, and they can exaggerate examples of hysteria, and they can exaggerate examples of how celebrities behave, and how newscasters behave, and how magazines would behave, and how companies with vested interests would behave in certain around certain scandals and things like that. But without making it, it makes it seem that they've, instead of exaggerating, actually they've distilled it and given you its most extreme form. And I feel like this episode does that so well, like with the jokes about the Tit Puncher magazine, and then the way that Manatee Fair kind of back out once they realise the financial problems that could be incurred if they were to let Diane pursue this with the magazine. And the whole thing is so... It's just so sad. This episode is so sad. So sad, and...
It's when it turns from being like a crime kind of undertones, or
the little all the president's men thing in the car park.
I think he's chilling there. He's Hank with that vocal performance. It's quite.
Mm.
I mean, he's a happy guy. I mean, it makes you wonder about people. Well, it makes you wonder about all, you know, all the like chirpy, oh yeah, they'd never do anything wrong kind of people, and that's what a lot of them could be like.
No, it's true. That, I mean, to be honest, best line of the whole episode is, "I'm Hank Hippopopoulos, and who the hell are you?"
Definitely. Definitely.
And it's like the first, I think it's probably the first moment in a BoJack episode so far where it's like the first moment where you just kind of sit there and go, fuck. Like, and yeah. Even Downer Ending didn't really, I mean, I love Downer Ending. I think it's still my favourite episode so far. But there's nothing in Downer Ending that just made me sit there and make it feel like my lungs and heart had been ripped out. Like, it's, I mean, I know that line was coming. I've seen this episode 3 or 4 times, but it's just devastating. And I remember when I first watched BoJack Horseman way back at, like, must have been, like, the middle of 2017,
yeah.
When I first got shown it, I think I caught up in time, just in time for season 4 to start. So,
yeah.
And, oh, my God, I remember when I first watched the first season and then half of the second season, I was like, I was watching it, and I was kind of, like, on my phone for, like, 2 or 3 minutes of every episode, and I was like, yeah, this is fine, but where's the pull? What's the deal? And, like, there were people saying, like, oh, this show's so devastating. Or, so it's like you kind of tune in and you persist with it because you know that something better is coming along, I'm sure, and then you get midway through the second season and you're just like, so where is this better coming from? And then this episode happened, and this was the first episode I ever remember paying complete full attention to when I first watched it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember where I was. I was watching it just passively.
Oh, right.
Well, I watched it all when it came out, season 1, and then I saw that, oh, look, they're doing another season. That's good for Netflix, okay. Let's give it a go, because I remember enjoying bits of it. I want to see where it goes, like, with its more surreal and abstract bent. And
yeah.
Then I was watching it in my parents' house, and I had the house to myself, I don't know. I might have been on uni break, and I was watching it alone. I was waiting for my then girlfriend to arrive, and I watched it. And then I watched obviously the rest of the season, and the upturn in dramatic kind of and suspense and dramatic qualities.
I think it all comes from this episode. Like, there are hints of it in Downer Ending, but then, like, in this episode, the tone of the show completely shifts.
Yeah.
And it starts to, it stops becoming, it's more like, how do I put this? Downer Ending is a particularly revealing episode, and it's a particularly important and crucial episode for BoJack, and it's emotionally kind of, like, resonant and important. But it's still a comedy scenario. Whereas I think this is the first time where it's at least 60% drama and then 40% comedy.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is... I mean, if you look at Downer Ending, that glamorizes almost, or at least, like, almost tries to make drug use and hard drug use comedic still.
Yeah,
I mean,
or funny, yeah.
It offers, you know, like, quick, hyper-energetic cutting, and it's all over the place, and it's like, oh, yeah... It reminds me of the drug play in Community. It's like the first half is, you know, and it's like, oh, drugs are cool. But then you get something like, well, obviously later on, it never glamorizes like drug use again. Certainly not.
Well, in that Community episode, Chang comes out, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he scares all the kids, whereas, like, Pierce, initially, when he's dressed up as Cannabis, he's like, hey, I'm really cool, I'm going to fuck this play up and, you know, make all the kids love me instead. And then Chang comes out and he kind of scares all the children and gets the message across anyway. And
I think the show that this is now, from here, wouldn't do an episode like Downer Ending anymore. As good as it is... It isn't the Wacky Horse cartoon anymore.
No, they're all people.
Yeah.
To be honest, the real strength of this episode, actually, it kind of, this is where I keep thinking the Simpsons references come up. This really reminded me, the way this episode concludes, I'm not necessarily saying that its lasting message is the same as Homer Badman. But you know how, like, Homer Badman deals with a similar kind of subject, and it manages to deal with the hysteria, the accusations, and the way that the media would respond. But nobody comes out winner or loser.
No, it doesn't have the gut punch because it's still all being played for laughs in a way. I mean, the edited... I mean, as great as a Rock Bottom video is, and how hilarious it isn't obviously something to joke about at all. I mean, like, one, if it actually happened, something like that, it'd be portrayed here, obviously, much more seriously. And two, the accused as well, he's played for laughs, you know. The wind that literally goes up his... his dripping gown to expose himself to people.
Come on, I'm a decent guy.
20 years difference, I guess.
Yeah. You
know, it just shows like how people's attitudes can change. I mean...
Well, with this, I feel like... at the end of I'm a Bad Man, Ashley Grant says, I'm sorry, Homer, I thought you were a monster. And then Marge says, but you know, Homer, I do hope you at least learned a lesson from this. And then Homer goes, Marge, my friend, I haven't learned a thing. And it, the way that they managed to conclude that episode while dealing with such a sensitive subject has always kind of blown my mind. I feel like that's where peak Simpsons continues to blow my mind, even though I've seen every episode from like season 4 to 8, like 100 times, is that they somehow manage in 20 minutes to come at the most sensitive, complex subjects, put the characters in the middle, have them play out this story, and then somehow reach a conclusion at the end where they've looked at both sides, made fun of both sides, understood both sides, and sympathised with both sides, and then come out at the end of it where both side, neither side wins, but you don't feel like you have a bad taste in your mouth. And I feel like this episode does something very similar, where it comes at... It's mainly the last 5 minutes of this episode that really drive this episode home and, like, how good I think it is. Because as sad as it is to watch Diane lose, she loses because of the feelings of the men around her, the men who were supposed to stand up for her in this moment and protect her and back her up. And they've all said, actually, Diane, could you just not do that? Because my career and my feelings don't need your ideology right now. But it doesn't make BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter out to be bad people. It's just that the industry that Diane is... It's not that Diane is fighting against BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter, or even Hank Hippopopoulos. It's that she's fighting against an entire industry and an entire system. And unfortunately, the moral... It's not really a moral, but like the message that you take away from this episode is that it's just... One person is too small to take on an entire system that protects people like Hank Hippopopoulos. And that everything is so tied up and everybody has vested interests. Like, Wanda has vested interests. Like, Wanda's a woman who clearly cares about this kind of stuff. And even she is saying, like, actually, Diane, could you not? And, like, Princess Carolyn says, yeah, I'm going to fight for your cause. And then the second that she sees that fruit... Trey, she's like, yeah, I'm out of here. And
it just shows, well, again,
she just gets let down.
It's another perfect look at how like horrible celebrity is, a celebrity and Hollywood and all the people around them. It just shows that essence that's just, it makes everybody kind of hateable in the show, you know, because like how we find some people hilarious and some people pointless, but is there really a good person in this entire show?
No, exactly. I think, other than maybe Todd, I feel like by the end of season 5, like, all the main characters are kind of... I mean, Princess Carolyn, I think, is an inherently good person, but in this moment she just kind of sacrifice a moral crusade for a personal gain. But I feel like that's kind of what this episode does, where it manages to explain quite well why BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter might not want to back Diane up, but at the same time it also exposes how little they're willing to sacrifice, how much they put themselves ahead of someone they apparently care about. Because, and I think it's a point that is made in the next episode where BoJack it says that Mr. Peanut Butter would has been flopping up his entire career. And I think that one thing that BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter don't understand is that because they're men, they can recover from this. And it, like, Hank Hippopopoulos even says to Diane, I'm going to go back out there and I'm going to be Hank Hippopopoulos all over again. The new cycle will blow over. But then he said, but you, this is all you're ever going to be remembered for. You won't be able to live this down. The public will never let you live this down. And
he's depressingly correct, sir.
Yeah. And Diane is basically, because of an ideological crusade, a really well-intentioned ideological crusade, has basically cost herself a career and a reputation. But the people who've actually done something wrong and the people who didn't back her up will just continue on. And then just to add insult to injury, that moment in the airport at the end, just where you think that guy is going to go, hey, I know you. I think you're, you know, completely right. And, like, you know, he just goes, hey, smile. And it's like, ugh.
The last 5 minutes of this episode are some of the most crushing TV I think it's possible to see. Yeah. Obviously, that scene at the end, and then just before the asking for space from Mr. Peanut Butter, get any more. Like,
I mean,
a season before, you know, this show.
I can't believe how far we've come in one episode. It's crazy. That's why I love this episode so much. It completely changed. It's why, I mean, I suppose at the time, you know how, like, the first 4.5 seasons of Game of Thrones, it was like, oh, everything's about the throne. And then Hard Home happens, and it's like, oh, maybe we have to deal with this first, and then it can be about the throne. And, like, it completely shifts the focus of the show in 20 minutes. And this episode does something very, very similar, where it switches the focus of the show, where it's finally revealed what it's actually about. We've been watching the show the whole time, but it's not been the show that it's going to become. And this episode is the first example of the show that BoJack becomes very quickly from, and then very consistently stays at from this point on. I think the second half of season 2 is devastating. I love the second half of season 2.
Yeah, I mean, even if you go back to the beginning of the episode, it's a lot. I thought that this one out of the two was almost like, well, not another passable episode. I remember it being good. I don't remember it being this great and this important. Because I thought that happened with BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter when they're in the rain. But to go from gag after gag after gag, and, you know, even going into things about how BoJack, the mock kind of press conference about the book, where they're like, hiya, BoJack, blah, 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 and then asking him about Israel versus Palestine. And then he manages to please both sides as well. It's a rare drop of, you know, like, humour that's needed, which,
yeah,
it doesn't really go. I mean, it's halfway through the episode, and it just, all the jokes, like, seem to stop, and it gets emotional, and obviously jokes come back, but it's definitely a comedy drama now, rather than just a sitcom.
Good old dramedy, as they call them now.
Indeed. But if you put the tongue twisters in there, and it almost makes Todd's essence almost a bit more welcome for me, because without that, you'd only have you know.
Yeah, totally get what you mean.
Intermittently put in, but it's just such a devastating end.
Very.
With a really positive, happy kind of ending with, you know, that not everybody's on your back, Diane, but just a crushing, ending, but for me, the best episode of the show so far.
Yeah, I am ready to grade. This is a 9.0 for me.
Yeah, I'm going strong 9, I think.
Cool.
I don't know what that means in terms of numbers, but yeah, yeah.
9.7, yeah. Something like that.
Yes.
So, we move on to Let's Find Out. BoJack is guest starring on the first episode of Mr. Peanut Butter's game show, Hollywood Stars and Celebrities. What do they know? Do they know things? Let's find out. I also love this episode a lot. The opening take, like the opening scene, now obviously this is a cartoon, so like single takes are easier to do, like long takes. But that doesn't make it any less impressive to watch. Like, I love how this single take follows Wanda all the way into the control room. I think it's great.
It's something out of the West Wing or something. Touch of Evil or something. It just goes on forever and it's great. I remember this episode being the first episode where I thought, yeah, wow, this is a great, great show. And that just amplified that even more. I mean, obviously, like, we've got the previous episode being a lot more powerful now, but yeah, this episode and that tracking shot, just following everybody around, is just amazing.
No, I absolutely... It's a really great opening. The thing I love about this episode more than anything is that I didn't realise how much of a companion piece this is to Hank After Dark. Like, you see, in Hank After Dark focuses so much on the behind-the-scenes element of that industry, the television industry, and all the things that go wrong and all the things that people lose and all the sacrifices people have to make and all the way they have to give up their ideologies just to make sure that television shows go ahead and certain people stay protected and all that. And then this is like the front of that, where this is the TV show that these kinds of people produce. And I feel like BoJack is asked to do something very similar, which is that he, in Hank After Dark, Diane goes on a personal ideological venture, and she is then asked to stop, and she loses. BoJack goes on a personal venture in this episode. He's asked to stop, and he doesn't. And $1 million goes in... Well, $500,000 goes in the flames. But,
it's a literal burn at the end. Yes. All episode, you've got people like giving BoJack a lot of grief and everything, and everybody's burning him, especially the amazingly awful Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, he's fantastic in this
episode. Insufferable. He's great. He's just like such an absolute dick, which is perfect.
His appearance in this reminds me of how the Simpsons used to treat celebrities before season 10, where, like, after season 10, it was like, who's going to be on The Simpsons this week? Find out on... Whereas in the first few seasons, it was, this celebrity's on The Simpsons, but we are not going to give them an easy ride. And it's the same thing that the show, actually, BoJack does with Jessica Biel in later seasons, where they have her, like, oh, I just want to play three-dimensional women. I'm so tired of playing three-dimensional women. I just want to play boring characters in stupid romance films and stuff. And with Daniel Radcliffe, it kind of reminds me of how The Simpsons used to treat celebrity cameos, which is like mock them, but kindly. When you're as famous as me, you forget how many people you meet. And there are just so many moments in that where they're asking Daniel Radcliffe to laugh at himself. And you have to have a really good sense of humour to come into an environment where everybody knows who you are, everybody knows your every move, and everybody knows has a general perception of you. And Daniel Radcliffe is a very good sport in this episode. He gets right involved. And I'm so glad that he's kind of not above this kind of, you know, he doesn't consider himself to be above this kind of treatment. Like, I don't have to get involved. Because if you think about it, like, BoJack Horseman's a big deal now, but this was like season 2 of some Netflix show. Like, you know, Netflix originals are a massive deal now with loads of money behind them, but BoJack Horseman didn't. It was kind of one of the flagship original Netflix shows after, like, Orange is the New Black and stuff like that, you know? And
this is coming off of season 1 as well, which, you know, it wasn't exactly...
Yeah, which isn't everybody's favourite.
No, yeah.
It just turns up. I mean, to be fair, I think Daniel Radcliffe's kind of mapped a career out for himself in this way, in the same way that Rupert Grint will occasionally, every 5 years, appear on a Sky One drama. Daniel Radcliffe will appear on shows like this and in films like Swiss Army Man or films like Horns, where they're like, they're not quite independent films, but they're kind of only going to ever be moderately successful at best. And I feel like he's mapped a little nice career out there. Emma Watson can go and do the big blockbusters like Beauty and the Beast, and she can turn up in films like The Bling Ring, and she can, she's got a good career set for herself there, and in politics too. Like, I'm sure she'll eventually move into that kind of like social politics stuff, and more power to her. Whereas for Daniel Radcliffe to turn up and deliver this kind of performance in a relatively fledgling Netflix original show at the time, like, you know what, hold my hands up, like, I'm not a massive fan of the Harry Potter franchise, but, like, I grew up watching those films, and it's nice that at least one of the kid actors in there has turned up and become something else entirely, in something else I also love. It's, yeah, no, it's very, very nice to have him in this episode.
It's refreshing because you've got the two poster boys are, like, the two biggest kid and, like, teen film franchises. I mean, Harry Potter with Robert Pattinson from Twilight. How they're both becoming like almost independent
serious actors. Yeah,
but they're also like massive stars as well. I mean,
yeah. Shout out to Good Time.
Good Time and the new Claire Denis film where he's in space.
High Life, is it?
Yeah, that was an experience. no, he's been great in everything after a certain awful film.
I would absolutely agree.
After that Remember Me, he's just, everything he's done has been great. It's like Kristen Stewart as well. Like, she's...
Oh, she was excellent
darling.
In Personal Shopper.
Personal Shopper's great. And yeah. Clouds of Silmaria. How has that happened? That had never happened in the 80s.
Yeah, no, it's quite something. So obviously, Daniel Radcliffe appears on Hollywood Stars and Celebrities. What do they know? Do they know things? Let's find out. And you can immediately see how much of a contest it's becoming for BoJack, where Mr. Peanut Butter's just trying to present the show, and obviously he just plays the role of host, taking the piss out of the guests. BoJack can't quite see it that way. He sees it as a personal attack. Because again, in the previous episode, Mr. Peanut Butter kind of upstages BoJack by just being a personality on TV. Like, it's something that BoJack has never managed to get over, the fact that Mr. Peanut Butter is also famous and happy. And, I mean, obviously this gets revealed at the end of the episode in what I like to call the rain sequence. But it becomes a conflict and a contest for BoJack to win, not against Daniel Radcliffe necessarily, but against Mr. Peanut Butter, against the audience, against Wanda, against everyone who's ever doubted him. And it's like, he can't not... He can't switch off in this episode. He is permanently just on. And it leads us to a wonderful scene. But in terms of where it leads BoJack, it leads him to just a mess in the end.
It all goes wrong from here, and it continues to get worse for him. From here, when he just, it's his pride and his ego that just encapsulates him, and he's the MVP of the whole episode for me. This is him for me. I mean, you could say maybe Peanut Butter as well, but this is just him. It's almost now, not stereotypical now, but it's in his... it's a character trait where he interacts with somebody and chaos just follows.
Absolute chaos. I mean, I loved how stupid some of the questions were, and obviously, like, the setup is that Daniel Radcliffe gets all the easy questions, like with the blue and yellow makes green, and BoJack has to look at how much of a role feudalism played in the French Revolution. But to be honest, to just kind of go ahead and talk about the rain sequence where Let's Find Out becomes Let's Get Real. the best BoJack episodes build to a point. They start from the beginning, and all of the individual pieces build towards basically an inevitable conclusion where everybody is impacted in one way or another. And Hank After Dark did it, where the little pieces at the start, where Diane... It's classic, it's brilliant cause and effect, really. It's really brilliant cause and effect writing, where Diane's, you know, BoJack's book tour leads to Diane being sat in an airport going to Cordovia, where a guy says, smile, and she's like, ugh, because it's that thing that men do, where it's like, oh, you'd look so much more beautiful if you smiled more often, but, like, and this episode kind of does a similar thing, where Mr. Peanut Butter hosting a TV show and BoJack being on it, like, this show is doing BoJack a favor. Like, it's giving him more exposure, but BoJack can't really see it that way because more exposure to BoJack is never a good thing. And it leads to the point where Mr. Peanut Butter's new TV show leads to the point where BoJack is publicly... where BoJack drops $500,000 of money into a fire pit. And when it happens, even as silly and nonsensical as it is in the moment, you don't really look back and think that things could have gone any other way. Which is what makes this show so good. I think it's what... Again, this is... It's one of the first, I think, one of the first examples where it's cause and effect storytelling that's been built over time. And it's one of the things that really kind of sets it apart from most TV shows, where everything that happens feels... in the main plot, anyway, feels entirely inevitable and organic. And I feel like when we go ahead to look at Escape from LA, the moment in Escape from LA that everybody knows about, that's the moment for me where BoJack went darker and beyond what you would expect a television show to do in order to portray realism. And I feel like this episode does a very similar thing where, yeah, okay, it's on stage in public, but I feel like BoJack is the kind of person to forget that people are there in this kind of moment, and Mr. Peanut Butter's the kind of person who would go along if he was asked to play up in front of an audience in the way that he is here. And all these kind of simmering tensions really come to the boil. And obviously when you find out that Mr. Peanut Butter has held on to the information that BoJack has tried to kiss Diane and not said anything, it honestly completely changes the way that... I think this is the moment Mr. Peanut Butter became my favourite character, you know?
Yeah. It's very, very probable. I mean, the episode before, he gets a lot more serious than we'll ever see him. Then, obviously, this is a continuation because he's down all episode. Even when he has like a brief chat with Wanda at the halfway point of the quiz, he has like a short break and he's just down. So he's not just the happy-go-lucky, you know, really bad joke-making Labrador. He's become again like something more human and more emotional.
Yeah, the line where Wanda says, if you want to make a game show where people don't end up happy, go ahead and pitch it to AMC, which I thought was quite funny. But
another great performance from Lisa Kudrow.
Wanda in this episode is gold for comedy, like absolute gold.
Gold for comedy, and then also gold in absolute... in doing absolutely nothing. When it comes out and she hears about BoJack and Diane,
oh, and she BoJack says, is Diane?
And then there's just it all just goes extremely quiet.
Yeah, this is what I meant about a cause and effect storytelling that affects everybody, because even though Wanda's not on that stage and she's kind of not paying attention to the show, she's on the iPad, that's the moment where her attention breaks and she fixates on what's just been said. And there's lots of it can never be the same again after this.
And this completely surprised me about it being Lisa Kudrow, because I'm a Friends fan, but I never thought much to Phoebe at all. I didn't think that there was a lot of emotional range there. There was the odd moment with Hank Azaria, who played the Doctor, and he has to leave. But other than that, she's just been like the kooky one almost, and
always, yeah.
And that's in everything, and it's like to have such dramatic, I want to say prowess, in a performance like such as this, it really put her up there. I think I might have underrated it. I'm interested to see anything else that she might have done that might have gone under the radar.
I'm not sure that I've seen her in any other kind of serious roles before, like long-term serious roles. You know, Friends was one of the only shows she did where she was in it for a long time. I think she was apparently, she was in an improvised online web series called Web Therapy for a long time. But that was on lstudio.com, whatever that was. She was in 7 episodes of BoJack, 4 episodes of Scandal, 3 episodes of Grace and Frankie and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I imagine that she's just playing the kooky role in possibly everything but Scandal.
She was in, to be honest, she wasn't in it a lot, but she played a semi-serious role in Easy A. You know, the Emma Stone film?
Yeah, I need to watch that again.
She briefly turns up in that as a teacher who, I think she cheats on her husband or something like that. And it all comes about because of something that Emma Stone's character does or says. It's been a long time since I've seen it. The only thing I really remember from that film is I got a pocket full of sunshine. It's the bit everybody knows. But, to have her blend into this role, there's clearly something in her voice that the voice cast. And again, fair play to Lisa Kudrow for turning up in this as well. This fledgling little Netflix show after one season. Like, fair enough for her to turn up into this and only just accept a one-season role, which I'm still quite sad about. Not in the sense that it's a bad decision that the show made, just that I love Wanda and I love Lisa Kudrow as a character in this, and it's a shame there's only 7 episodes of her. But some of her line delivery in this episode, I think the best moment in the episode is, and I mean this on a drama and comedy level, is when she says that there are people losing their tits, and she says that she stumbled onto a cancer support forum, and it's like, oh my god, it's one of those jokes where you sit there going, I cannot believe they went there. Like, I can't believe that they did this at this point in the show. And it's just, it's one of those moments where the episode has lulled you in to such a down point that when the punchline comes, it's classic, like, leading you in one direction for so long and then whipping you back in the other direction, and all you can do is laugh out of shock.
And I mean, it's Phoebe from Friends. It's not as if it's, you know, like Jesse Pinkman or Gob. You know, it's she's fantastic in every episode that she's in, but especially in this one.
Yeah, no, definitely. Is there anything more you want to say about this episode? Because I feel like I've said everything I wanted to say.
I feel like that Todd,
the pen stuff, yeah.
In a later season, I don't know if they'd make him like make out with that Mia. I mean, just,
yeah,
you know, just to chuck something in there. That seems like something that they try to do, because that's all he's got as a personality trait now for some reason. But the gags were still in this episode. Mr. Peanut Butter on absolutely astounding form, doing BoJack impressions and just being his regular, slightly overbearing and annoying self, who whose gags are really enjoyed by J.D. Salinger, which makes no sense that he'd like
I kind of love his role in this episode where he feels like this game show has become a piece of art that he's just going to let behave however it wants to in order to satisfy his creative curiosities. Like, I did kind of love that.
When he brings up Homer's Odyssey and would Homer cut away? It's just a surreal gag chucked in there, but it works even while all this like dramatic mayhem is occurring.
Yeah.
It's just, it ticks all the right boxes. I don't think anything, I can't think of any kind of, any negative.
Excellent. I mean, the Todd stuff is good for me, but like, it's not on the level of the rest of the episode, so I'm going to give it a 9 again, like a 9.0, but I mark very harshly, so 9.
Yeah, I mean, I think if any pair of episodes that we've done so far, it can be called like anything approaching like masterpiece status or anything, it'd be these two. I mean, it's a perfect like double header. The first episode, Hank After Dark, I thought that seemed like more dramatic, but then really know things in the last like 15 to 10 minutes just keeps hitting you with, you know, feeling after feeling after feeling, and then it still manages to end on on a gag from Daniel Radcliffe where he just Elijah Wood.
So what are you going for?
I'm gonna go strong 9 again.
Cool. So next time we'll be looking at season 2 episode 9 of BoJack Horseman, which is The Shot. BoJack cooks up a scheme with Kelsey Todd, Princess Carolyn and Mr. Peanut Butter to steal a crucial shot for the Secretariat film. And we'll be looking at season 2 episode 10, which is Yes And. Todd gets sucked into the cult of improv comedy. Wanda thinks Diane is a bad influence on BoJack when he has to deal with a career crisis. So we will get into both of those. So until next time, everybody, thank you very much for joining us for the two best episodes of BoJack Horseman so far, but hopefully not the two best episodes ever, because that means that it's all down from here. Which we know it's not, so.
No, but I mean, what an amazing two episodes. Again, it's just, it's made me want to, like, well, it's made me want to have a lie down, I think. and almost watch them again, I think.
Maybe that's just work and life.
Well, it's the first time that I had to like take a break in between, like just watching two episodes back to back, because the first one hit me so hard, and I knew that the next one would. So you've got a lot to live up to season 2, and on.
Well, anyway, I've been a Rob Wilson type.
I've been a Samuel Cook type.
And we'll be back whenever we're back.